Hi, my name is Tanya Rao. I'm a coffee roaster and founder of Kaveri Coffee Works. We select coffee from India and roast them fresh in Berkeley, California. And you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a conversation with third-generation coffee roaster Tanya Rao. Stay tuned. Once again, a heartfelt thanks to everyone for listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and sharing it with your friends and family, and of course for following us on that good old social media. If you're enjoying these conversations, please take a moment to submit a kind rating and review wherever you might be listening or watching, as it's truly appreciated. So we all have personal rituals and favorite ways to engage in these rituals. Some of them have been passed down in families and through tradition, and others are more personally relevant. Some are elaborate and complex, and even quirky, while others are mundane and routine and offer familiar anchoring. For instance, as I write and record this intro, I'll have likely arranged my desk in a certain way with my microphone placed just right and my yellow, not white, pad of lined paper ready for taking any notes. And for a lot of people who may be listening to this in the morning, chances are you might also be enjoying some coffee as part of your morning routine. So it was great to share a chat with Tanya Rao, a third-generation coffee roaster who knows a bit about threading the needle between tradition and routine and exploring the subtle nuances and beauty of iterative change. Tanya is the founder and owner of Kaveri Coffee Works, among the only women-owned Indian coffee companies in the U.S., with beans sourced from local farms across India and particularly from Karnataka. Tanya grew up in Bangalore, India, and after immigrating to the US and spending a few years as a software engineer and in the finance industry, she founded Kaveri as a reflection of the coffee legacy and tradition of her own family, as both her father and grandfather operated a coffee business in India for nearly 70 years. With the backdrop of being a new mom, a family rooted in a coffee tradition, and the inspiration to bring the coffee of the sixth largest coffee producer in the world to the eager morning and daily rituals of an American consumer, Tanya has created a new tradition of small batch production to elevate the flavors and styles of a South Indian coffee culture, including everything from the 80-20 pre-ground chicory blend to showcasing the celebrated filter kapi process to getting hand-picked beans from farms that are actually fed by the River Kaveri. We caught up in Berkeley for a conversation, and as we started chatting on a particularly misty post-rain morning, I asked about the uniquely mellow monsoon coffee from Karnataka, and also about Tanya's own morning coffee routine.
Coffee, once it's been harvested, goes through a different processing phases to extract the seed, you know, which is the coffee bean, out of it. And the monsoon process is something that's unique to India, which, you know, is started during the time of British colonization, but continues till today because it's uniquely Indian, and it has its own kind of qualities that a lot of coffee drinkers love.
So for you, is your kind of daily routine, whether it's a kind of misty morning like this or something that kind of makes you remember some of the monsoon or post-monsoon mornings, does your daily routine start with coffee?
It does. It has now. So I went from being a social coffee drinker to being a regular coffee drinker. And so now I feel more authentic and legitimate saying I'm a coffee professional and I have my own coffee routine.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, does that contribute in some ways to the, you know, kind of like the science part of it that, like, you know, hey, every day is a new kind of experiment in this?
No, because coffee is a comfort beverage, as with tea.
Yeah.
And most people, kind of once they find their comfort with coffee, they rarely change the routine. Huh. It's like a habit. You know, you have something that anchors you. And so my first cup is that anchoring, start the day.
Right, start the day.
I My husband, more so than me, he does not like to experiment with that first cup. And the experimentation, exploration, and all the learning happens second, third cup onwards.
So it's rare that that first cup will be the, like, you know, let's try the 85-15 blend as opposed to the 80-20.
Absolutely, blend. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And also the brewing method, you know. So we've identified a brewing method that kind of like works for us, and that can't change. But, you know, over a certain period of time, you know, we found that like comfort method that suits our morning routine.
I'm curious because, you know, for you, this is probably something that, you know, spans decades, right? That like your family's daily life has involved, you know, coffee for quite a long time. And, you know, that influence, that kind of those anchors, like you said, you know, of comfort, and even, you know, sometimes the experimentation have been there for a while. Was this something that when you reminisce or recall or reflect on growing up, something that you also equally have always found comfort in, that you actively sort of enjoyed? Or was this kind of always part of the backdrop and you had to in some ways kind of learn to enjoy that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I left home when I was 17. And when I think back to memories and things that make me feel warm and fuzzy about home, it's certainly coffee plays a huge role in that. My family, you know, we had a coffee roasting business, and that was primarily kind of led and managed by my dad. He was the coffee drinker in the house. My mom was actually a chai drinker. She knew how to make the perfect cup of coffee for my dad. Never once, you know, tasted it or enjoyed it herself. And so my sister and I kind of like fell into the same sort of, you know, different categories of finding that comfort. So I went the coffee route, my sister went the chai route. And I personally did not enjoy chai very much as when I was younger. You know, now it's different. Yeah. But so for me, when I think about the familial, nostalgic feelings of home, coffee is what comes to mind more than the actual taste of the beverage itself. It is the aroma. Yeah. It's the smell.
Yeah. And even the routine, I imagine, of what your, you know, mornings were like, and, you know, even enjoying it with other people. Is that something that became that much more fonder as you grew older? Or do you remember, like, even being before you left home, that like, no, this is something that we really, it's a big part of our mornings or our days. And this is something that we all enjoy as a family.
Yeah, I think it was something that we all enjoyed as a family. And it also was sort of anchoring and part of a routine. Like now when I think back, you know, it's my dad had three cups of coffee in a given day. He started his day with a cup of coffee, had breakfast, got ready, and just before, you know, he went to work, he would have his second cup. Okay. And then he came home for lunch, took a nap, and then would go back to work for the evening shift. And before he went to work, he would have a third cup of coffee. And so, you know, your day kind of like was scheduled around that.
Yeah.
Cup of coffee. And in India, you almost like the ritual is you have coffee after a meal.
Yeah.
You don't start a meal with coffee. It's almost like a digestive or kind of like the dessert that, you know, seals the deal.
Sort of the top off.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so that was part of the ritual. Even when you go to somebody's house, or we would have people come to our house, that's always the first question when you welcome guests, right?
Right.
Coffee or tea? Yeah. And that's how we start a conversation or, you know, a gathering.
Did you ever, as a teenager, naturally ever get sick of that?
No, I didn't. It sort of was part of a cultural, it was sort of there. It was never it didn't feel burdensome or annoying. And then I remember when I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, my mom was like, okay, you're ready to now, you know, make the cup of coffee. And of course, we would always serve it. And that was also part of the, you know, whole experience.
Do you remember that first time you made filter coffee?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
What was that like?
It was cool. So growing up, we had kind of like a nanny. Yeah. And so there were very few occasions where we went into the kitchen to kind of cook a meal or help assist. And whenever they went on vacation is when, you know, my mom and dad like would get us into the kitchen and we would have those shared moments. And so I remember this was a time when we had some guests and, you know, my mom was in the kitchen and she was like, yeah, you can come along and help. And that itself was, you know, kind of like a privilege to be allowed into the kitchen.
Very special.
By, you know, to be working next to a stove and an open flame and all of that. As I mentioned, you know, my mom was a precision, like, a cook. You know, she learned all the recipes from my grandmother. She, you know, and even though it wasn't her favorite dish or she didn't drink coffee, she knew how to make that perfect cup. And so it was not a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, she had her measurements down.
And so you had to almost, like, you know, live up to that standard.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So and
was that first cup, did it meet your standards or her standards?
I think so. I mean, it mostly met the standards of... Because we were a coffee family, and so when we served coffee, like, it had to be, you know, good coffee. So it met the, like, family standard of serving a good cup of coffee to our guests.
Almost dependent on your audience's reaction.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
And I mean, even in thinking of those experiences, whether it's the first time that you, you know, made a cup of coffee and to that sort of precision formula that your mom used, were there any other memories that, particularly growing up around coffee and in your family, that in fact were romanticized? And for that matter, even because those are so romanticized, have they been hard to duplicate because of that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our family kind of life was rooted around my dad's business. And so often, you know, we would go spend time at the coffee shop where his roastery and office, and those were all sort of like treats, right? It's kind of like take your kid to work day. And those happened either on days that we didn't have school or, you know, when he would come and pick us up after school and we would run errands with him. For me, the notion of owning and running your own business itself was romanticized and itself was something I aspired towards. And so in 2019, when I decided that I wanted to, you know, pursue that romantic notion of starting my own business in whatever field I previously was, initially wasn't as to start a coffee business. But I kind of grew up with this feeling like being your own boss is something that is a special thing to do. And in reality, it's not an easy thing to do. Right? So that's where like the romanticized view and reality kind of don't quite match.
You quickly come back to earth as the,
on
the entrepreneurial side.
And it, again, it's not that, you know, it was my interpretation of the stories I was told, not necessarily, you know, my dad never indicated that it was going to be easy. In fact, he's shared stories of his struggle in the early days, and all of that kind of in my exploration of starting my own business here, it comes flooding back. And unfortunately, my dad is no longer alive, so it's not that I can rely on his counsel and advice to kind of help me navigate these, but it is entirely what I was exposed to growing up is kind of my foundation for wanting to do this. It's my motivation, you know, intrinsic motivation to continue doing this and to build something that from grounds up that I know is possible.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with third generation coffee roaster, Tanya Rao. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Lily Singh, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with the founder and owner of Kaveri Coffee Works, Tanya Rao.
In thinking about that kind of foundation, right, the like idea of your dad really shaping what it's like in your eyes to mm-hmm. be an entrepreneur, to be a coffee roaster, and now as you've developed this, I've read that you shared that Kaveri Coffee is kind of like your second child, mm-hmm. which many people equate their businesses to often be. Is there something about being the daughter of a coffee roaster, or for that matter, now being a parent, mm-hmm. that has particularly in some ways prepared you to run Kaveri, both as the knowledge and the backdrop of having gone through that growing up, but then now also as a parent? You know, are there some lessons that are common from both of those experiences now that have really kind of shepherded Kaveri to be more successful?
Yeah, absolutely. I draw lessons from both my parents. Yeah. So, you know, my dad definitely was the role model for a coffee roaster sure. and a self-starter. And my mom, after she got married, you know, she stayed at home on the request sort of like of my dad and my family to take care of the household and the kids. And after we were old enough to go off to college and she was, you know, I had an empty nest, she's like, okay, what do I do now? And so she completely reinvented herself, went and took, you know, computer classes and started her career in her like mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
And for me, both of those are such great examples and role models that you can pursue whatever you believe is possible by you, you know, at whatever stage in your life.
Yeah.
And so I was at a stage in my life where I had, you know, gathered a lot of knowledge and skills in various different professions and trades, and was still discovering what it is that makes me, you know, really fulfilled, what makes me feel like I'm starting to build a legacy to leave to my child.
Yeah.
So that, I think, was the turning point, is when I became a mother. I did not want to leave a legacy of unfulfillment or resentment.
Sure.
Because I was a mother in this current world where, you know, in many ways, mothers or young families are just not supported in the workplace.
Right.
And to struggle through that and still be an unhappy and sort of like unfulfilled parent. So it was that combination of like seeing what my parents were able to do. And sure, it wasn't easy for them, right? Like one thing you learn as a new parent is there's no book.
Yeah, it's no playbook.
There's no playbook. Yeah. There's no how-to book
yeah.
on doing it, quote unquote, right. And so you've got to figure that out for yourself in a way that, you know, makes sense for you personally, but also for the family collectively. And so I think that was, to me, like this moment of growing up.
Yeah. And growing up rapidly.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I imagine that growing up with that backdrop of some, you know, terrific role models and seeing how both your parents were able to navigate through their experiences and now then translate that as a business owner and as a you know, founder of a coffee roasting company.
Mm-hmm.
For you, there's, you know, being a female entrepreneur, being a third generation coffee roaster, sourcing through direct relationships with small family owned farms in Karnataka,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of themes of just responsibility and pride
mm-hmm.
and real mission driven value here.
Yeah.
As you've developed this and stuck to that, Have there been any surprises in along the way of thinking of maintaining that throughput, if you will?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I started my business in 2019, just before the pandemic.
Good timing.
I know. So that was my first biggest surprise. It's right. Like how to navigate a new venture in a new, completely chaotic world.
Yeah.
You know, that first year was just mainly about survival and survival, not just of the business, but in that belief that I can sustain this business or I can pursue this business. And in coming out of that unknown of the pandemic, there was a huge awakening in the local community, both from other small businesses and also, you know, because technology allows us to connect across time zones and borders.
Right.
There was a community that was just coming together to kind of support each other and to also pursue dreams of meaning and fulfillment. And so it was nice to be part of that like awakening and feeling that support of community. And for me, when I started the coffee business, or when I chose coffee as my avenue for starting my own business, it was twofold. One reason was the personal connection and the nostalgia that I had about, you know, continuing my family's coffee legacy. But it was also about connecting with people across cultures, across, you know, geographical
boundaries.
And that to me was at the root of what kind of fed my soul and fed my, like, I don't know, my
the
little
purpose,
the purpose for wanting to do this business. So I think the women-owned aspect is sort of almost a given because of who I am. In any industry these, you know, today, there's many like male-dominated industries where women are trying to kind of claim their space. And so this is just another area where, you know, I'm finding, again, meaning in making those connections to find my sense of belonging. And even like hierarchically, like the business in my family has been from started by my grandfather. My dad took over and there was no expectation for my sister or me to take over the business. And I don't know if it's generally like was gender biased, but it could just be an opportunity thing because, you know, we moved to the US to seek education and different opportunities. So I don't want to say it was patriarchal in that sense, but it still goes to kind of show that, you know, often there aren't that many women in the coffee industry. And just that being a focus of who I am and what I believe in has allowed me to make these meaningful connections, both with other women in the industry and men, right? It's it just kind of lends a different perspective in building relationships.
Almost like finding a community of very like-minded individuals who have this mission-driven kind of value.
Yeah.
And has it been easy to find a community in this way? Or at least if you build it, they will arrive and join you and that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't use the word easy. I feel like I'm able to do what I'm doing right now and enjoy it because of the community that has come together, both intentionally and not intentionally.
And I'm curious about one thing, and that is that certainly the Bay Area and being in Berkeley plays a role here where there is a spirit of inclusion with innovation and filling spaces in that way. I'm just so curious if you've connected with women who are coffee roasters in India and shared, you know, any common experiences. Are people who are doing this in India also experiencing more and more of a building, so to speak, or more ladders of opportunity there too?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have followed other female roasters in India. I have not connected with them.
Yes.
It's and majority of the time, these connections or lack of, you know, making connections is to some extent time and availability on my end. So I have to make some connections and networking, you know, sure. Have to be strategic. Some of it is just curiosity and learning. What I've been able to do, and I believe that that's a good start, is connecting with women coffee producers, people who are sort of still at ground level when it comes to the whole coffee journey. And it's the coffee journey is it's an incredibly long and detailed and beautiful journey. And so finding people all along the supply chain and seeking women in these spaces, you know, I've had success with. That has been kind of like a recent development that I'm super excited about. You know, in the world of like coffee importing, a lot of it is done in volumes and it's done kind of, the logistics of it can be quite complicated. Sure. So that's a part that I'm still learning and figuring out, where I rely on people that have done it and know how to do it well versus, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel or find space to do something with my own custom ideas or my own, you know, resources.
And I imagine that there must be some great kind of, again, pride that comes from developing relationships with perhaps little known women coffee producers and now amplifying and even sort of like spotlighting some of their work and including them in this coffee journey.
Yeah.
Where it perhaps they may or may not have had a similar opportunity, particularly to develop a relationship with someone in America.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's definitely a area of, you know, opportunity, especially here in the US, which I'm hoping to do justice to.
Right. Really amplify more.
Yeah. Because, you know, I was sharing with somebody, coffee from India is generally unknown to a large extent here in the US. And I've tried to unpack why that is. And one simple reason is that it's the farthest place you can get coffee from, especially on the West Coast to India. It's the longest journey coffee will go to get from point A to point B. And there is so much more. There's an abundance of coffee from Central and South America that's way more easier available.
And is that why coffee from, say, Karnataka makes its way most commonly to Italy, is what I read?
Yeah, so I think that some of it is ancient trade routes and relationships. It's also proximity. But we were talking about monsoon coffee earlier, and so monsoon coffee is very popular as an espresso blend or espresso beverage, and Europe has a stronger espresso culture than here in the States. And so that has become kind of like more popular use of Indian beans are in Europe than have made their way over here, you know?
And that's so interesting that, you know, I didn't even think about like, you know, well, it is the longest route and the longest distance to get here from India. So, and it sounds like for you and the way that the business is continuing to develop, is there an element of change now that you've been able to facilitate to make it a little bit easier to, in fact, ensure that, that's not a barrier?
Yes, I've been this year especially been able to find some partners who are able to kind of like help me facilitate the movement of smaller amounts of coffee. Because that's the challenge as a small producer, coffee producer, and a small roaster. We cannot play the volume game, which is the, you know, most of the time when there's international trade, you're trading in volumes. It also makes the economics work better. And so here it's a little bit of an experimentation, both in terms of logistics, but also economics, with the intent of creating that awareness. And hopefully in trying to build these pathways and relationships, we can, in the coming years, you know, work in larger volumes and make the economics work. And also, for me, it's also about representation. here in the US and the coffee industry. There's definitely movement and change. There's greater representation of people from coffee producing country, sharing coffee stories, sharing the coffee, sharing the like cultural pride of the coffees. And, you know, that's just beautiful to see.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with the founder and owner of Kaveri Coffee Works, Tanya Rao.
Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sigda Swar, the founder and CEO of The Juggernaut, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with third-generation coffee roaster, Tanya Rao.
When you think about the fact that there's, you know, small coffee producers and small batch roasting, allowing there to be a pretty kind of signature experience. Mm-hmm. Is the goal in some ways to reproduce the nostalgia of the coffee experience? And then and if it is, then how do you balance that with the kind of newness of an American mm-hmm. experience and the innovation perhaps of that?
That's a great question. And I kind of
probably battle with that a little bit, right?
I'm constantly, thinking about it. When I first launched, I almost launched it in more of a generic, this is Indian coffee, can be consumed any way you like it. So wanted to introduce Indian coffee in that familiar routine that most people have when it comes to coffee, and just sort of like plant that seed that you have. There is this origin, coffee origin, that you may not have heard of or tried, give it a try. Yeah. And we're not introducing too many new things other than a flavor profile and the story behind the coffee.
Yeah.
So I launched with that approach. And once I felt like confident enough to say, hey, these coffees can be enjoyed by the people who enjoy other more well-known or more sought-after coffee origins, I started to, you know, filter in a little bit more of that nostalgia and the Indian culturals and traditions.
Filter it in, no pun intended.
Exactly.
Or maybe it was intended, right?
Indeed. And so, and it's also about accessibility and audience, you know. Yeah. I personally, when I came to the US, I lost a little bit of that cultural touch with Indian coffee.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Indian coffee only when I went to India because it was brewed the authentic way. But here, you know, I didn't really like enjoy Indian coffee that I would bring back and brew it here. It just didn't taste right. And so it's, you know, to people who miss that flavor, miss that nostalgia, you know, trying to recreate that. And it cannot be recreated in the same way.
Sure.
Like I remember I started to get interested and go from being a social coffee drinker to more of a, you know, serious, curious coffee drinker. Yeah. Once I went to Costa Rica and traveling there, like even the hotel coffee is so good.
Yeah.
But bring that coffee back to the US and it won't be
different.
So coffee enjoyed at origin will always have fresher flavors, you know. And again, it's a time and place. It's a full experience. And
in thinking about that, I mean, as you've developed this expertise,
mm-hmm.
at, you know, learning along the way, both as an entrepreneur, but even as a, you know, sort of coffee connoisseur, if you will, right? And combining that sort of art and science of delivery, the experience of it, closeness to the source. What have you, and thinking now about filter coffee, what have you learned about coffee culture in different parts of the world, but particularly obviously in India versus, you know, the States. And, you know, what have you perhaps learned about those who are truly faithful to that original experience?
Yeah.
And those who might be tasting it across the globe for the very first time.
Mm-hmm. So the folks that have stayed true to the taste or the ritual, I think I admire them because it's a lot of work, right? Sure. Like, especially when you think about the tradition of brewing coffee, it's a slow process. Just like cooking, you know, it's a slow method of appreciating, and it requires time. And in American life, not a lot of shortcuts. And you know, the result kind of is almost directly because of the time you put in.
Right.
It's
dependent on each step.
Exactly. Yeah. But here in the US, you know, we're constrained on time. We're always on the go. We're always in a rush. And so being able to enjoy the ritual of filter coffee brewing is, I think, a lost art, especially for, you know, people who have migrated here. But I've known many to find shortcuts, you know, like I've had somebody make filter coffee through the espresso machine or even a drip machine and still kind of create that nostalgic taste and flavor using, you know, Colombian beans, still using like a chicory blend and all of it. And so you, so you kind of innovate when you're assimilating, right? And so now we're trying to go back, as with so many things, we're going back to our cultural roots and trying to do the things the way our grandmothers or, or, you know, ancestors were doing it, just to reclaim some of that history, but also to reclaim some of that appreciation for what that beverage is or what that ritual stands for.
Almost even giving people licensure to say, hey, listen, if you're going to take the shortcut and you're going to make something that reminds you of it, it gets close, but it's not quite there, then that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you want to take the next step and take the time and have that patience, almost like guiding them, someone through all the steps that are needed to actually get to that authentic cup of coffee that your grandfather or someone's grandmother may have been, you know, doing also. There's a way to get there.
And, you know, going back to the cultural representation piece, you know, when you think about most commonly consumed coffee beverage and the way it's been brewed, it's all been in the consuming country, not the producing country. And that's what most people are exposed to and familiar with. And again, there is a reawakening, reinsurgence of cultural pride and cultural representation. You're finding people who are brewing coffee the way like their Mexican grandmother would brew, or the, you know, Vietnamese brew their coffee. And people, especially in the Bay Area, but, you know, all over, love that experience, exploration, and exposure.
A lot of storytelling.
Absolutely.
You know, your pathway to do this, of course, was not so linear, right? Was in fact that a necessity to go through that non-linear pathway in order for you to obviously not just appreciate the product now, but in fact, you know, jumpstart it in the way that you have and go through this, you know, at the beginning of a pandemic? I'm just curious how this perhaps may have been different had you in fact, you know, launched right away into the family business and taken that mantle on. And I'm sure you've reflected on this and thought about like, how would that be different in some ways? But I'm curious, like in thinking about this now, was that non-linear pathway actually in fact a necessity?
I wouldn't say it was a necessity, but I would say it definitely informs and shapes what I do or, you know, how I view this business, both for myself and how I hope to create impact in the industry or the community. Because my past experiences inform who I am and, you know, what my own like values are. And so it probably, if I had pursued the path of just, following in my father's footstep through his, you know, guidance, I might have taken a different approach or, you know, shared a different level of pride. The nonlinear path I took, I feel now makes my story a little bit more richer, more spicier. Yeah.
More flavorful.
But, but also more, you know, to me, again, it's what am I hoping to share in bringing not just the idea of this business and Indian coffee, but like the full package, you know, is it helps inform, like my past experiences helps me inform now what values I hold, and what mission I focus on, who I collaborate with. And I think, you know, that makes for a richer experience for all.
We were talking about like the anchors of comfort that mm-hmm. you have, you know, with coffee. Do you have a favorite coffee that sort of serves as that anchor, or is there a process of constant discovery where you are like sampling and learning and also, you know, discovering new favorites?
Mm-hmm. I would say I'm definitely more of a sampler and in pursuit of discovery and adventure. Yeah. I also pride myself to some extent in saying, you know, I welcome change and I welcome new experiences. And so while I still feel comfortable in my current coffee ritual, you stay there for too long and then I get bored. So that's my...
You must need the infusion of yes, something new, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And I mean, for you, you know, with that kind of embrace of change and discovering, I imagine that, you know, even in the process of mm-hmm. figuring out what is the sweet spot, if you will, mm-hmm. of how to brew these small batches, is it important to some degree that, you know, each batch is a little bit different from the previous one?
Yeah, I've always, you know, in many ways, I feel like I'm a perfectionist, but also I feel like the pursuit of perfection in itself has many imperfections.
Yeah.
And so...
Which by itself, by the way, I'm imagining goes part and parcel for how batches of coffee get produced in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's always going to be, you know, some variance in the product each time.
Yeah.
And it could be just something that I do versus the environment that, you know, the coffee is roasted in or even produced at. And I think there is beauty in
right.
those subtle variations, and it helps us kind of understand and explore what coffee can be, or, you know, what we enjoy in that cup of coffee,
yes.
fully aware that, you know, not everyone's going to like the same thing.
Sure.
It is a path for self-discovery, and an opportunity for us to just be like, oh, to what degree are we okay with the variance
yeah.
versus, you know, this is my comfort beverage. I want it to be exactly the same every
yeah.
single day. And that's okay too.
Yeah, almost that there can be some comfort even in knowing that there's a new beauty you're about to experience. And
mm-hmm.
it might be a surprise and it might be reproduced the next day, or you may never have that again.
Exactly, yeah.
You mentioned so much of the storytelling and the kind of rich backdrop of your family's business. But in thinking, if you could imagine now your grandparents and your parents
mm-hmm.
walking into Coro and sharing a cup of Kaveri coffee right now, what do you imagine they'd be saying? Or how do you hope they'd feel with this new experience?
I hope that they would be really proud, you know, of what I've been able to build, and in many ways also feel familial, because, you know, both my grandfather and my father at some point started from scratch.
Right.
And that's kind of like part of the you know, family pride and legacy. And so it's kind of almost that nod, like, we knew you could do it.
Right.
You know?
We get this.
We get this, yeah. And then I didn't know my grandfather very well, but my dad, I think, would be so amused to see all the different kinds of, you know, coffee beverages, and the extent to which even coffee roasting is so nuanced. And because he, you know, when he came to the US, he would love to like go to Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks and try all these crazy like flavored drinks, because right. that was a new experience for him. That was a novelty experience sure. in the world that he's familiar with. You know, it's something totally new.
I imagine also there may be a true sense of just not only the familiarity with the business aspect of it, but in some ways kind of like a respect and a true nostalgia for mm-hmm. the anchor that you're providing back to that legacy too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I know that so many are experiencing that and thinking of that legacy and, you know, really kind of appreciating all the storytelling that's going on. Thank you so much, Tanya, for sharing some time with us, and I hope we can visit with you again down the road.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Tanya. A reminder that we're inherently born with the capacity to love and seek each other's company without any need for violence and bloodshed. Perhaps the adults of the world should learn from the kids on this one. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.